This is an ABC podcast.
This podcast contains offensive language and other cool stuff.
The following work is a gross abuse of copyright. Names, places, and events have been unchanged. I've done this with the firm belief that a king's story is more important than the literary regulations I flaunt. Todd Noy, Sao Paulo, 1991.
This is Finding Drago. I'm Alexi Toliopoulos, and in the previous round of Finding Drago, it all began with the curious little book. I brought Cameron James, and I guess you all as well, into the mysterious world of Todd Noy, the author of Drago, On Mountains We Stand, a novella that follows the life of Ivan Drago after the events of Rocky IV. On the very last page of the book, we discovered the About the Author section, which states that Australian author Todd Noy has been missing since 1992 and is presumed dead. But if Noy is dead, how is this brand spanking new copy of Drago on Mountains We Stand signed by him? And this is exactly where Cameron and I will continue our investigation on this episode of Finding Drago. So Cameron James, my very best friend in comedy and in real life as well. I'm going to bestow that upon you today on the podcast. I'm coming out with it. I gave you a little task. I lent you the book, Drago on Mountains We Stand, which is affectionately known as Todd Noy's last great masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked you to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do that?
I did.
You did?
I read it. I read it from cover to cover, which was good because it's very thin.
Yes, those covers are very close to each other.
It's a slim read, but it's great. It's better than I thought it was going to be. I've got to be honest. I've never read much fan fiction.
Okay, fan fiction. What do you mean?
Well,
this is a book.
Yeah,
about Drago.
It's not official. It's someone, Todd Noy has gone, I like the movie Rocky IV, I'm going to write some fan fiction about Drago.
But fan fiction is like stuff that's written in forums. And this is a book that exists.
Okay, I can confirm officially this is a book, but that does not mean that it is an official book. The first page on this book, which we've heard at the start of this podcast, is the author's note, which says, the following work is a gross abuse of copyright.
Mm-hmm.
That means this is fan fiction. That means this is not canon. This is Todd Noy's fantastical writings about Ivan Drago.
Well, I've had lots of talks with Star Wars fans about what and what's not canon in my past, but this to me is canon in my heart.
Okay, all right. I was really not sure what to expect with this book, but it's written in a pretty cool style. It's very blunt. It's very to the point. As we've already mentioned earlier, the chapters are often a page long.
Or
half a page long.
Sometimes a page has two or three chapters on there.
That's true. One chapter, chapter 54, if you must know.
I know it well.
Do you know what chapter this is?
I think I know what you're about to read me.
This is not even part of the story. This chapter 54 is just the poem Invictus by William Ernest Henley from 1888. It's just a whole page of someone else's work.
Well, the book is similar to that in many ways as well.
It's quite nice. I think it's a cool story. I like the idea of seeing what Ivan Drago is up to post Rocky IV.
Do you think that it achieves what I think it achieves? Does this book humanize the character of Ivan Drago, who up until this point, as we've seen in the movies, is just this machine?
I'm going to answer your question with a direct quote from the novella.
Allow me to close my eyes and soak it in.
On Mountains We Stand, Chapter 8. Ivan Drago has never taken a moment to even consider who he was, what he believed. He'd always just done precisely as instructed, always to the highest possible standard. a machine, a workhorse, without distraction. It wasn't until Drago found himself in the Swiss Confederation, on the shores of Lake Lucerne, within sight of the mighty Rigi and Mount Pilatus, that he came to a stop. He gazed across the vast, still lake as the morning sun began its ascent. Tears began to trickle down his otherwise impassive face. A lone soldier who felt tiny neath the shadow of the mighty mountains. He raised his fists in defiance.
I am Ivan Drago!
That's cool shit, dude.
Yeah, it's really already does much more work humanizing Ivan Drago than the entirety of Rocky IV.
Yeah.
It's quite a cool story.
The first paragraph, he gets dunked by his wife, who was, of course, played by...
the wonderful Brigitte Nielsen.
In the film Rocky IV. So she leaves him because she is also part of the collective that helped to build him. He's out there on his own. We're seeing Drago finally as a human.
Yeah.
And Todd Noy should... be saluted. He should win all the prizes in the world if it were up to me for that. Which maybe brings us rather gently to what we're going to be doing today on this podcast. Because this is called Finding Drago, but it may as well be called Noise Story. Cameron, why don't we read that entire About the Author section once again to line up what we're going to be doing on this podcast today. Researching every little freaking clue that Todd Noy has left in his one paragraph bio, which is all the information we have in the entire world about him.
About the author. Todd Noy was a Pulitzer Prize-winning sports journalist and novelist from Perth, Western Australia. He has written for VFL Weekly, The Guardian, and KO Magazine. His novels include Okodike, House of Fuego, The Alabaster Wars, and... Drago. He was awarded an honorary degree from the University of New Delhi in 1984. Noy disappeared in January 1992 after a long battle with alcohol and drug addictions. Presumed dead, a memorial service was held in his honor in Perth in December 1995. He is survived by his two sons, Marlon and Quince, and long-term partner, English cellist, Elizabeth Harrington.
Quince.
Marlon and Quince.
Yes.
Well, look, there's a lot of clues in this About the Author section. We can really use this as a leaping off point for our gumshoe investigation. Why don't we look up some of the publications that he's...
Yeah, that he's been a sports journalist for, much like Ray Barone, played by Ray Romano, the TV series Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah.
He's my favorite sports journalist, also the only one I've ever known.
All right. Can I get you to... Yeah. Have you got your laptop ready?
I've got my laptop open.
Have you got that Google...
I've got the Google app open on my laptop.
Todd Noy was a Pulitzer...
Can you look up this publication for me? VFL Weekly. Australia.
Okay, I've looked up VFL Weekly.
VFL Weekly.
It was just leading me to a VFL website. The first few links are all images of the book, Drago on Mountains We Stand.
There's nothing. No articles.
Nothing. Nothing there. Please.
Well, maybe it just didn't have an online version.
Why would they archive VFL Weekly online so two schmoes in 20 years can find out about it?
Yeah, that's actually not too crazy.
He has written for The Guardian.
Search Todd Noy, The Guardian.
No. The first thing that comes up is a PDF of Drago on Mounds We Stand. Mm. Everything is Drago on Mounds We Stand.
And KO Magazine. Look that one up.
Do you mean OK Magazine?
The celebrity tabloid mag? No. KO means knockout.
KO Magazine was a popular United States boxing magazine. Was first published in 1980 to compete with The Ring. Hopefully not the movie.
Noy disappeared in January 1992.
KO Magazine ceased publication following the acquisition.
It's a dead end. It's a freaking dead end.
Let's not write it out completely.
This was my first introduction.
Nothing comes up. It just brings us back to the Goodreads article.
Todd Noy and the amazing body of work that he brought into the world.
So one of the things that I have found is a Sports Illustrated article called What Happened to Ivan Drago After He Lost to Rocky. It's written by Chris Chavez, who I guess is a sports journalist, his own damn self. And
a Ray Barone type.
Your regular Ray Barone type. I wonder if his mother and wife give him gruff as well at home.
I wonder if he lives across the street from his parents.
Everybody loves Chris Chavez. But he says there's a 1989 book released on Drago by Todd Noy. In the book, Drago is disgraced and disowned.
Oh, so they're mentioning Todd Noy in this Sports Illustrated.
This Sports Illustrated article was written on July 10th, 2017.
Well, that adds some legitimacy to it.
This is recent stuff.
Todd Noy's
Todd Noy,
T-O-D-D.
Presumed dead.
Yeah.
I put Todd Noy in quotation marks.
Who is this Todd?
I've learned how to Google.
Masterpiece.
Next, maybe we should look for the other books that he's written.
Can you Google the first book title for me?
His novels include Ochre Dyke.
The Ochre Dyke is a small stream in the southeastern part of the city of Sheffield in South Yorkshire, England.
Okay, zoom in.
It rises near Mosborough Moor.
Enhance.
In what was originally Burley Wood, but is now a housing estate.
Enhance, damn it!
Ochre Dyke is a small stream in Sheffield. So it's not a book.
It's not a book. It's barely even a body of water. Okay, all right. Let's move on from that.
House of Fuego?
House of Fuego! It's nothing. All I've got is Fuego Volcano Disaster.
The next one is the Alabaster Wars, 1981.
Now, that is the one that I remember reading comments about.
Oh. Yeah.
So this is from someone who posted this on the Drago on Mounds We Stand page.
Still lacks the visceral energy of the Alabaster Wars. But all the same, a triumph of literature. At nearly 4,000 pages, it took some reading, but I'd never read anything like it. I still do not believe that Todd Noy is no longer with us.
So this is the opposite of Drago on Mounds We Stand, which is, 87 pages. This is over 5 times that length.
Over by one.
So there's not really anything coming up with the Alabaster Wars. It leads me kind of back to those comments just about that book being a masterpiece.
You know what? It says right here that he is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist.
Okay. That's Look a pretty that prestigious prize.
It's kind of like the gold Logie of journalism.
On Pulitzer.org, they're an organization, not just a .com. No search results for Todd Noy. Please modify search keyword.
Just put Noy.
Okay. There's no search results for Noy.
All right.
This Googling shit is leading us absolutely nowhere.
all right, why don't you go talk to a real journalist then?
Yeah, we're in the freaking ABC. Why don't we think about that earlier? The place has got journalists flying out of its wazoo right now. I'll go downstairs, talk to some journos about Todd Noy, see if they know any.
All right, look, while you're doing that, I have started getting a little bit interested in the world of fan fiction. I want to know why the hell people write it and why the freaking hell people read it. So I'm going to talk to a fan fiction expert who will maybe enlighten me somewhat. So, Rukmini Pandey, you are an academic at OP Jindal Global University in Delhi and a genuine, bona fide expert in the world of fan fiction. For some of our listeners out there, and I'm also including myself in that, can you give us a broad definition of what fan fiction is?
Sure. Fan fiction, in essence, is any kind of narrative expansion of a existing fictional universe. So it could be both professional and kind of personal. There are a lot of, the Sherlock Holmes series has had a lot of published work that expands the universe there. And that's, that's official fan fiction, I suppose. And that would be something like the Star Wars expanded universe as well, which is made official by the copyright owners of that franchise. And of course, there's fan fiction as it is seen, which is unofficial, which is hosted on a variety of websites such as Archive of Our Own or Wattpad.com, or, there are many, many websites where fans will write their own stories based on a character or a series and, just put it up there for free to share it among a fan community.
What made you so interested in fan fiction? Where did that come from?
Well, I was in fan fiction communities, as a participant from, really my undergrad years. And then I started to think about what it means to have these very large transnational transcultural communities that come together over certain texts and produce these millions of words. And, you know, not just words, actually, I mean, audio with fan video. And as somebody who came from literature, I was really interested to see how universes can be expanded. And what does that tell us about how people respond to text?
Now, you've danced around it a little bit here. You've said your participation. Just let me know, did you write fan fiction, Rukmini?
Oh, yes, absolutely. What? I wasn't very good at it, which is why I stopped.
You just moved into the academia of it. So what were you writing fan fiction of? Are you E.L. James? Did you write the Twilight fan fiction?
Oh, I wish. that worked out very well.
That worked out well for her. What kind of fan fiction were you writing?
Oh, I was writing fanfic about anime, a really old, obscure one called Waze Cruise, which was about florist assassins, you know. And of course, I continue to engage with fanfiction. You know, it's very hard not to, when you watch an Avengers movie and you decide what else could happen.
Yeah.
And then you have this whole narrative universe to play in. So I tend to read more because, you know, people are better at writing it than me. but yeah, I totally wrote.
And you are, like, you're the expert. Have you ever come across Rocky fan fiction before?
I have not, which is, I mean, I was really interested when you referred to this section of fan fiction and fan works around Rocky, because it's not, I mean, I'm a big fan myself of the franchise. I've watched, you know, all the movies. I'm really looking forward to Creed 2.
Yeah, me too.
And I wonder if there'll be kind of a resurgence of that interest.
I'm with you. I've never even considered that you could write a version of Rocky. I mean, it's about two guys punching each other. What are the stories that have the most fan fiction written about them?
Star Trek is considered one of the primary kind of texts. Star Trek zines were publishing fan fiction from the 70s onwards. So that's seemed to be one of the kind of longest running fan fiction fandoms. The more open a text is, it is theorized that the more fans want to engage and play in that sandbox.
All right, let's get a little deeper. Tell me about the people that read fan fiction. Who are these people? You're obviously one of them. Why do you read fan fiction?
Oh, well, as to who reads fan fiction, I mean, everyone. Anyone who engages in fan communities, of course, demographically, from what we know, from how we studied the community over the years, it is mostly women, a lot of queer women who are in these communities, but there are lots of people of other genders, sexualities, nationalities. I grew up in India and I engaged with it, you know, while I was doing my undergraduate studies. And I have plenty of friends who, you know, were also reading fan fiction. I have young students that I teach right now that are also reading it. You know, that's in Delhi. You know, people around the world are reading and writing fan fiction in their own languages. So they're really, you know, it's very hard to say who exactly reads it. There's such a broad variety of people. And as to why they do it, it is literally being obsessed and being, you know, really nerdy and geeky about a particular popular cultural text and wanting to do more with it, you know, wanting to push at its boundaries.
Well, this book that we've got, the Ivan Drago story, On Mountains We Stand.
Yes.
I've read it. It's pretty well written. This person, Todd Noy, is clearly a very good writer. I want to know, why don't these writers just try to write and publish their own original stories? Why do they work within the boundaries of other people's imaginations?
I think it's not mutually exclusive. A lot of a lot of people who write in fan fiction also write original stories. Sometimes it's about creating a sense of representation that isn't there in the original text. Sometimes it's about thinking, what if there was a Hindu Harry Potter, or what happens when you are a Jewish person in Hogwarts? There's a lot to be said about how these fictional universes are constructed and how they can be challenged or expanded by readers. And that, I think, is the pleasure of fanfiction. There is a impression that fanfiction writers do it because they're not very good, or because, you know, they don't have the imagination to construct their own work. But I think that's a little reductive, because there is so much creativity that goes into these. Sometimes it's about, I want to work through what this character could be, you know. So for Ivan Drago, I would imagine that it would be about, you know, what is this war machine that is being built in this Cold War, Russian idea of constructing the perfect killing machine, really. And, you know, kind of thinking about what could be the deeper psychological aspects of it. So it's a lot of kind of deconstructing those ideas and looking at flat characters like Ivan Drago and, you know, trying to think about what makes them tick.
Do most people write under pseudonyms? Is that common in fan fiction world?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. Most people will write under pseudonyms.
Why is that?
A copyright, a lot of the time. Fan fiction is under US law. It is protected under fair use because it's seen as transformative work. But it is still open to being cracked down upon by people who think sometimes that it is some kind of infringement on their narrative universes. A lot of writers don't actively prosecute it because, again, it's part of fan community and it actually helps them. But some have been quite upset about how people take their characters and what they do with them. And when I started out, people used to be really careful about kind of divorcing their identities from their fandom activities, possibly because fans are sometimes seen as weird, you know, and seen as overinvested. So that obviously is something that people are aware of. But I think that that has changed. People are now much more willing to identify themselves
as fans.
Mm. Yeah, as fans and as people who, you know, yeah, who may be by normative standards a little bit weird, but, you know, who engage in these communities and produce some pretty good stuff.
All right. Thank you so much for talking to me, Rukmini. You were absolutely delightful and a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I'm glad this was useful, and best of luck for your continuing search.
Oh, I love Rukmini.
You know what I find interesting? Rukmini thinks that this could be someone working through their issues with Drago. Now, Alexi, you yourself have some issues with Ivan Drago.
Cameron, I think I know what you're suggesting, but Rukmini also said that people that write fanfiction like to put representation of themselves in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to rewrite a Rocky story, it would also have the premise of, what if Rocky was Greek?
It wouldn't be that different.
It'd be pretty similar.
Yeah, maybe instead of punching slabs of beef, he'd be punching plates. Punching goddamn Dalmatis. Can I say this stuff?
Anyway, Cameron, while you were doing that, I went looking for some journalists, and look who I found. I feel like I've hit a jackpot right now. I've got Tracy Holmes. She's a longtime sports broadcaster and journalist. Check out her CV. She's presented Grandstand.
Oh, yeah.
News Radio. Mm-hmm. You can hear her every Sunday on the tickets. Tracy, you've worked in and outside of the ABC since 1989. First of all, what was the world of sports journalism like back then?
I was thinking back about my early days here.
Yeah.
So I came here as a sports trainee broadcaster, which was like a 2-year kind of internship. And you learn from the best, you know, all those great names that people still talk about.
Yep.
Jim Maxwell, cricket,
yeah.
You know, Jerry Collins commentated, I don't know how many swimming gold medals at the Olympic Games.
Mm.
Norman May was around. He'd always pop in. I was lucky enough to go and train under the great George Grigiozich from WA,
who, along with
Benny Pike, had some of the best boxing commentary you are ever likely to hear.
Really? So you knew, like, boxing commentaries from WA back in the 80s?
Yeah.
KO Magazine, ever heard of that?
Yeah. Boxing magazine.
Boxing mag, yeah.
It's now defunct.
Yeah.
And The Guardian?
Like boxing, almost.
Oh, no.
UFC
killed
it.
No. I like boxing.
Yeah.
I do, and I can't explain why, you know.
Yeah.
One of the earliest sports I had to go and cover was boxing.
Mm.
And I remember the first time I turned up at this bout and there was just blood being sprayed everywhere, and I thought, this is a poor, I don't think I can sit here any longer. And then I sort of had this realization, these guys No one's forcing them to be there.
Yeah.
They want to be there. This is such a battle of mental wills. And so I've been a bit of a fan, even though I can't justify the fact that in 2018, I don't think two people should be hopping into a square and bashing each other's brains out. But there's something tribal about it.
Mm. Yeah, it taps in you, in your primal place.
Yeah.
So you knew like boxing commentaries from WA back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Did you know Todd Noy?
No.
Really? Todd Noy, he wrote about boxing, VFL in the 80s, sports journalist.
How could I not know about him? What's he done?
He used to write for KO Magazine, and he's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist from The Guardian, I think, as well.
Yeah, from The Guardian
as
well.
He mainly covered boxing. He's a WA journalist.
Have you heard of VFL Weekly?
No. Writing for VFL Weekly.
He
won a Pulitzer.
Yeah. maybe it was for The Guardian or something else.
Is that rare?
Well, I also think it's highly unlikely because I think the first Australian to win a Pulitzer was 2006, wasn't it?
Oh. Our guy's been missing since 1992.
Geraldine Brooks was the first. I think there's only been two.
And was that for sports journalism?
No.
So, have there been any sports journalists win Pulitzers?
I think many should have.
I agree with you.
I agree.
I absolutely agree, 100%.
And I think sports journalists around the world, they are some of the great writers.
Yeah, yep. Ray Barone, he's our favourite sports journalist.
Is he?
Yeah, from Everyone Loves Raymond. Glamorises a lifestyle a lot on that show, though.
Let's go back to WA.
I'm
curious about that. So, you were working in WA, what time? What years are we talking about?
Oh, so this is 89, 90.
That sounds around...
That's around Noy's time. Mm-hmm. Noy disappeared in January 1992 after a long battle with alcohol and drug addictions. Presumed dead, a memorial service was held in his honour in Perth in December 1995.
Doesn't ring any bells. But, you know, having lived and worked in Perth, and so I was at everything that was there, from World Swimming Championships...
Yep.
To the cricket, to the AFL, to whatever was happening, I never remember his name coming up, in press boxes anywhere. And, you know, you talk with everybody. You get to know everybody.
Yeah.
It's the scene.
Whether they're, you know, Ken Sutcliffe or, you know, Jacqueline Magne and Karen Tye were there around those times, Ray Hadley, Bruce McAvaney. Uh-huh.
What about at a premiere for like a Rocky movie or anything? Would you have remembered him there? Do you like Rocky?
I do, actually.
So do I.
I think they're the best sports movies ever. What about Ivan Drago?
I love Ivan Drago.
Would you maybe love Ivan Drago enough to have written a book about Ivan Drago?
Sure.
Are you Todd Noy? Is it you?
Have we found you?
And you have to be honest.
You have to tell us the truth. Are you Todd Noy?
Do I look like Todd Noy?
Well, no. We haven't got a photo of him.
Pulitzer hanging around my neck. I wish
true.
I was Todd Noy.
That's
he
true.
Sounds like some kind of genius.
He's apparently he is. I can't find any information about this guy. And there was no archived articles of his for VFL Weekly or KO Magazine, anything. I honestly thought you were going to be the key.
Yeah.
Look, I'm really sorry. I'm so sorry to disappoint you. But it's also got me intrigued now.
Do you think there would have been many journalists who focused almost exclusively on boxing in that time, or would there not have been enough work for them?
No, there wouldn't have been enough work for them.
Okay.
Although, you know, Noy might have been independently wealthy.
Oh, that's something we
might have run off with all his money.
Okay.
He might not be dead at all.
Well, we might think that he might not be because this book is brand new and he went missing in the 90s and the book is signed by him. So we think he might still be out there, and that's what we're doing. We're on the search for Todd Noy.
Why?
I don't know. This is absolutely crazy to me right now.
It's nutso.
Because we just found someone who should have known Todd Noy.
Yeah, she's a sports journalist.
Yes.
She's from Perth.
Yes.
She covered boxing.
Yes.
At the same time that Todd Noy allegedly did. And she's never heard of the guy.
They would have been in the same circles.
They should have been best friends.
Tracy and Noy.
Tracy and Noy. I feel like we know less than when we started, even. Like, listeners, here's something that you don't know about. We actually called up the Pulitzers to see if mm-hmm. they had any like listing of Todd Noy somewhere as a Pulitzer Prize winner. And well, what happened, Alexi?
They literally hung up on us.
They hung up the phone.
We called them. We had to come in early to work one day to call them. They hung up the phone on us.
So first of all, it's like, okay, what are they hiding?
Mm-hmm.
But then also, it's just further another dead end. We know nothing about Todd Noy. The only evidence we have about this guy is this book that we're holding.
We have a physical copy of a book, and that's the best evidence we have. So I'm going to go back to frickin' basics. I'm going to leave the building. I'm going to go out of the building to a place that I know in Sydney, Australia, that by law has to keep all the books by Australian authors in there. I'm talking about the State Library.
Okay. But they have to keep every Australian book there.
Even if they are a criminal, they have to have the books by the authors in the Library of Australia State Libraries.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. They have to have them in there.
How do you know that?
Well, if you must know, I remember seeing an episode of A Current Affair, like probably 20 years ago, that has stuck in my brain,
uh-huh.
where people of the local community up in arms are very pissed off that the State Library had many books written by grubby Australian pedophiles about their crimes and what they are interested in and invested in. And the community was pissed off at the library, said, it's not our fault. We have to have them because they're Australian authors. We have to have them. We can't do anything about it. So it was A Current Affair roasting the libraries about it, and they had to have them in their walls. So Todd Noy's an Australian author.
The State Library, like, we're just following your orders. That sounds familiar. By another state.
Well, here's what I'm going to do.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to go out into the world, yes. and I'm going to find Todd Noy.
Yes.
I'm going to go to the State Library.
Yes.
I'm going to wear a frickin' wire.
You don't know.
I'm going to get them on tape admitting that Todd Noy is out there. He's still out there.
You don't have to wear a wire.
I'm going to do all that and more on the very next episode of Finding Drago. That was round two of Finding Drago. This series is produced by me, Alexi Toliopoulos. Presented and created by me and Cameron James, and featuring Ben Russell as the voice of Todd Noy. Our theme music is by Luca Baroni-Peters. Production and sound engineering by Bryce Halliday. Our consulting producer is Anna Bronowski, and our executive producer is Tom Wright.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.
Hey, it's Ray Barone. And Todd Noy is my favorite sports journalist. Oh, Deborah!
My name is Ivan Drago, and you are listening to Finding Drago.